This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. So, when was the last time you drove to Los Angeles International Airport? How'd that go? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Kimmel. Welcome to LAX. We apologize for the construction, but you'll forget all about it once you get on the 405.
And the people who run the airport know that, too.
The traffic at LAX is notoriously poor, and anyone who's flown through this airport knows how difficult it is.
Keith Wilsheets runs operations over at the airport.
It's been that way for a long time, and it's getting worse. Quite frankly, we continue to grow, and more traffic comes with that, and we're starting heavy construction in the central terminal area, which is going to reduce the capacity. So it's a situation that is not acceptable to us, and we have got to fix it.
But how? How will they fix it? Well, one idea, among many, is controversial and is set to take effect in just a few weeks. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb is here to talk about the plan and the response. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
All right, LAX is the fourth busiest airport in the world. It goes between, like, you know, second and fifth, sometimes it's sixth, which means traffic is bonkers over there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking about 88 million passengers last year. And you know what hasn't helped all that traffic? Uber and Lyft. I mean, of course, it's convenient, but pickup is upstairs on the departures level, and it's added to what during rush hour or a holiday weekend can be a slog over at LAX.
It's pretty much all the time right now. But if that's such a big problem, Benjamin, what is the plan that LAX officials have to fix it?
Well, let's be clear. They're not going to fix traffic at LAX, but they do have a plan, one idea, to make a dent. So starting October 29th, in about a few weeks, instead of getting your Uber, your Lyft, your cab right outside of your terminal, there's going to be a new dedicated parking lot. It's outside, just east of Terminal 1, outside of the airport, and that's where all of those rideshare cars and taxis are going to pick you up. Now, how do you get there? Well, you can walk, or there's going to be about 36 big green shuttle buses. These buses are going to run in the inside lanes of the arrivals area at LAX, so this is downstairs. Those lanes will be just for those buses. Now, right now, there's cabs, super shuttle, personal pickup there. That's all going to be gone. Angie Jamison has been working on all of this for LAX, and she showed me around the new pickup area.
The buses come in on a dedicated bus lane. They come in through and park here. There's room for 10 buses to park and offload simultaneously. And then as people come out, this first lane, the whole first lane, this is taxis. And then we have the shared vehicles up at the front.
She's describing this parking lot where there used to be 800 parking spaces. You've probably seen it driving into LAX, and now this will be where you get dropped off by a shuttle to pick up a cab or an Uber or a Lyft right next to Terminal 1. And they're trying to make it nice, Steve. There's going to be food trucks, they say. There's restrooms that I saw, changing stations, charging stations too. And there's some benches, little umbrellas, but if there's a crowd, there's going to be some people standing in the sun or, in rare cases, in the rain.
The rare cases, of course. Now, does this apply for pickups and drop-offs? I mean, what if I'm taking a rideshare or a taxi to the airport, Benjamin? Will I have to go to this lot first?
No, you're not going to have to do that. This applies only to pickups. So everything about your trip, if you're flying out of LAX, stays the same. You can still take your rideshare or your cab right to the terminal.
All right, so what if someone's picking me up at the airport? What if, you know, these changes are taking place, will they still be able to pick me up downstairs outside a baggage claim like they've always done?
Yeah, that still stays the same, except for a slight change. So again, that inside lane at LAX downstairs at arrivals, that'll be just for these shuttles to the parking area for Uber and the taxi. So you'll need to catch that ride from a friend or a partner on the outer ring downstairs.
Outer ring downstairs. What kind of response is, Benjamin? Because I've seen this in the news for the past few days, and a lot of people seem to have opinions about this.
Yeah, as you can imagine, there's a lot of different perspectives. People are very passionate about LAX. For some, it's the devil you know. For others, it needs to change. For example, Blaine Langston is a businessman from Austin. He works in insurance, and he flies to LAX pretty often. I asked him why he likes the idea.
Clarity of pickup area. I mean, so most of the time we have like 8 different places you can be picked up, and as soon as you get off a plane, you can never get geolocated with your GPS properly, so they never have any idea where you are. You can never find the Uber pickup spot. I mean, it typically takes 10 minutes just to find your Uber anyways whenever you get out of an airport, and it's more frustrating. At least you have somewhere to go.
And that somewhere to go is also something that drivers at LAX like too. I spoke to an Uber driver named Armin Manukian. Here's his take.
It's much better.
Yeah.
It's much better. Here, it's wasting time. So over there, it's less time and very fast.
He's talking about how much time, Steve, it can take for Uber and Lyft drivers, anyone really, to make their way through that infamous horseshoe at LAX.
I know, Benjamin, there are a lot of people who are worried about this, though, taking a shuttle to a car. And my initial reaction was, oh, Lord.
Yeah, and you're not alone. Sure, rideshare pickup hasn't always been easy at LAX, but many people feel this is going to make it worse. Here's David and Claudia Shalom. I caught up with them just as they flew in from JFK in New York, and they come to LA often.
It makes us not want to fly into this airport. Partly we're family. We have a toddler, a 2.5-year-old. And so it's tough enough as it is, let alone having to go ahead and creating some sort of additional...
Like the less complicated, it's like heavenly for us. But if we have to take a 5-hour flight and then a 20-minute shuttle bus just to get to our Uber, and then finally another 30 to 40 minutes to our final destination, that just sounds like a headache.
And it's a headache, Steve, in the mind of some of the drivers as well, like Carl G. He told me he's worried about how efficient this whole process is actually going to be just by the sheer number of people.
So many people use Lyft and Uber, and well, and a lot of taxis too, that's a large, an insane amount of people placed in one spot, and then have every single car to pick them up to come to one spot. It's going to be lines of 100 car deep just to pick people up and go.
I mean, that's what I'm envisioning, too, because, if you just go to one of those pickup points right now upstairs, you see how many people are waiting for their rideshare. So surely airport officials have heard people complaining about this.
Oh, yeah. But, they feel really confident that this will really make a difference. Let's hear again from Keith Wilsheets at LAX Operations.
People love their Uber and Lyft and Opply, and we don't want to take that away. What we want to do is to change the system in a way that they still get all that convenience, but it makes it easier for people to get in and out of our central terminal area. This program is going to take 15,000 trips a day out of the central terminal area. So right now we have 100,000 a day. 15% are going to be taken out.
Well, that's nice and all, Benjamin. 15%, right? But yeah. It doesn't really sound like much compared to the inconvenience laid upon travelers who are coming in. What about long-term, with all that construction that Jimmy Kimmel mentioned at the outset? Will things get better?
So overall, the message from LAX is be patient. Remember, this was once a modern, sophisticated airport, but it's really a dinosaur now compared to some other places. But there are some long-range plans in place. You'll soon be able to take a metro line to an airport stop. They're working on a little monorail going up, a new car rental facility. But will all those things fix the traffic? Probably not.
All right. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Bon voyage.
Thanks, Steve.
We appreciate it. Well, coming up, the scripture says a lot about forgiveness. And now, so is the city attorney's office. That's next on Greater LA on KCRW. For most Angelenos, if you get a parking ticket or a moving violation or a ticket for jaywalking, you just pay it and move on. Maybe you sit through driving school to keep that ticket off your record so your insurance bill doesn't go up. And you know those penalties aren't cheap. A parking ticket can run $70 or $75. A traffic ticket can go as high as $500. And if you're poor, you may not be able to pay. Or if you don't have a home, you may not be able to get the bill or the court information in the mail. You don't have an address. That can result in additional fines, bench warrants, mounting debt, even jail time. Well, last week, the city and county of LA announced they're forgiving a total of nearly 2 million of those types of citations and warrants. In a statement, the city attorney, Mike Feuer, saying the move will help the city to, in his words, focus on the most important public safety issues and help address root causes of poverty and homelessness. And Mike Feuer joins us right now. Welcome, sir.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. Tell me how this move came about. Why right now?
Well, we've been looking at this issue for a while, as has the police chief. All of us are grappling with how to direct the most significant public safety resources to the most significant public safety hazards. And we took actually two steps at the same time last week, only one of which has gotten major attention. That one, of course, is what you've described, is the move to eliminate the fines and fees and the underlying cases in many instances of old, minor, low-level infractions. But the other step we took with the police department is to put in place what's called the Fugitive Misdemeanant Recovery Project. The department now can focus on bringing in people who have outstanding warrants who for serious misdemeanor offenses. And we've begun to do that with LAPD now.
I want to go back, though, to some of the smaller citations, right? The traffic violation, or maybe it's a parking ticket or something like that, because those can really add up. If I had such a ticket that I hadn't paid, I don't, by the way, am I in luck? Is it gone now? Does that mean it's just wiped away?
No, first of all, thanks for letting me know that you're not among the people for whom this is going to have an impact.
Oh, no, I'm very judicious when it comes to parking in L.A. Yes. So, yeah.
So, but very seriously, here's what happens when you have somebody who has an outstanding matter and they haven't appeared. Two things occur. First, as an additional $300 immediately that is tacked on. And second, the matter can be referred to the DMV. What happens is your license gets suspended. So what happens next? You can't get insurance. So if you can't get insurance and your license is suspended and you need to drive to get to work, for instance, you either drive unlawfully on the street, jeopardizing others without accountability, or you don't go to work at all. So there's this cavalcade of consequences for these people. And almost everybody involved in the universe of infractions that we dealt with last week is by definition going to be a poor person, someone who's indigent.
What happens going forward, though, because I know just a few years back, this is 2016, 1 in 6 arrests made by LAPD was of a homeless person. A lot of those had to do with these outstanding citations and warrants for minor offenses. Does the LAPD then need to change its whole policing approach when it comes to dealing with the homeless and these low-level violations? Or can we expect the pipeline to just fill right back up again?
Well, that's a really compelling question, and here's where things stand. Again, these that we dealt with are by definition old. They were operating under an old system that doesn't have the same opportunities now. At the same time, however, people do need to be accountable for their actions, and that includes people who are homeless. Our office has in place a program that, again, didn't exist years ago. And that program says to a homeless person who has one of these low-level infractions, we will help you get rid of it, but you need to be accountable and connect with a homeless services provider who's likely to help you lift yourself out of homelessness. So there are some systems in place that are designed to help, but I do not think that it should be the case on our streets that the step we took regarding these old low-level infractions should signal a lack of accountability now.
You recently proposed a pretty tough ordinance cracking down on visible homelessness. It was rejected by the city council as being draconian, would have banned people sleeping outdoors in many areas. It was like a stand your ground law. It prohibited people on the streets from acting in ways that would provoke others to violence. I mean, how does that recommendation, do you think, jibe with what you're putting forth now?
With due respect, I think you mischaracterized the actions of our office. Let me try.
Please inform me.
Straight here, sure. So we were asked by the city council to present an array of options that would be lawful on our best interpretation of the Constitution and statutes and so forth for the council to decide what steps to take. Among the proposals that we put before the city as options for them to, for the council for to take into account, was a proposal that I support, having there be some distance, 500 feet, between homeless encampments and newly constructed homeless shelters and schools, to take two key examples. I think it's important for us as we look to site homeless shelters, which has been, as you know, very difficult to do, that we convey to communities which need to say yes instead of no to those locations, that these locations will not become magnets for homeless encampments. With regard to schools, I think it is appropriate to say that kids who are walking to school shouldn't walk through a homeless encampment on their way to school, and the encampment shouldn't be immediately adjacent to where they attend school. So it might be that you or others characterize my view on homeless shelters and schools and the distance that encampments should be from them as draconian, but I think that is a mischaracterization.
Well,
this is a very common sense approach that most Angelenos would support.
With all due respect, the city council said that. I did not say that.
Here's what the council did. There was a split among council members. It's been sent back to committee because there were other components, as you point out, to the proposal that was on the table in addition to measures that I specifically support. The council sent that back to the committee for further analysis because there's a difference of opinion on the city council. I respect that difference of opinion. I just disagree with those who think that we should allow homeless encampments next to newly constructed homeless shelters and schools.
City Attorney Mike Feuer, thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
All right. Carol Sobel is a civil rights attorney. She has sued the city, by the way, a number of times over homeless issues. Carol, thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me.
All right. So you just heard from Mike Feuer talking about this program, this forgiveness program for hundreds of thousands, as many as 2 million citations for the homeless. What do you say?
I say that it's great that they did it, but it's a little bit too little and too late for a lot of people. It will leave homeless people in the same situation because it doesn't remove the citations and the collections that have gone into effect over the last 5 years. And we know that that means about 50,000 citations out there, which is almost on average one for every homeless person in this city. So if you think that it's really good to take down these barriers for poor people, take them down altogether. And I would note that the reason so many homeless people have these citations is because the city initiated a broken windows policy under Bratton. It was called Safer Cities Initiative. It went into effect in 2006. Thousands of citations, I think it was 12,000 the first year on Skid Row alone, and there were only about 7,000 people on Skid Row. So almost everyone on Skid Row got a citation for something. I had clients who got a citation for littering when the ash from a cigarette dropped, and they bent down to pick it up, and the officer wouldn't let them pick it up, but instead issued them a citation for littering. They were a bogus effort, and they continue to be, to compel people to do something that they can't do because the public officials have failed. People try to connect with services. There aren't sufficient services in this city. So you've got people going in circles because there's no way they can get off the streets because public officials have just failed to do their job.
You mentioned homeless services, and a lot of times it's the police officers who are involved in getting homeless people to those homeless services. Do you think this approach, I mean, it's not necessarily a criminalization of homelessness, but you do have a lot of these citations that go out. The cops have to deal with the homeless people in the streets every day.
Well, it is a criminalization of homelessness. It used to be officers who would sit on their motorcycles at a corner and just wait for somebody to do some petty little thing that they could write them up for. And the problem with that is now almost everyone on Skid Row has outstanding citations, has things in collection. We go into court all the time to get these tickets out of collection. They are a barrier to getting jobs. They are a barrier to getting benefits. They are a barrier to getting housing. And so we need to look at what these barriers are and say to ourselves, if it's a good thing to do it 5 years back, it's a good thing to do it right now as well. Because as rents go up, people become homeless. We passed a new state ordinance on rent control. That's terrific that we did that. It allows for 5% increase for landlords and cost of living on top of that, which is about 3% now. And I think landlords should be able to get that increase. But keep in mind that every 4 or 5% increase in rent means 2,000 people become homeless. Are we being proactive about that, or are we simply applying the police when we find them on the street?
Civil rights attorney Carol Sobel, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Back in just a moment on Greater LA with Gustavo Arellano and KCRW's Orange County Line. Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Let's head to the OC. Off to Santa Ana, or Santana, as some folks call it, where last week there was a push to establish a police oversight commission. Crime is high in the city. There have been some higher profile accusations of police misconduct. So now there's been a call for more transparency and specifically more accountability. Now, what exactly is behind the push? Is it likely to make a difference? Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times, and he's here to break this down for us for KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So why would Santa Ana's police department need an oversight commission in the first place?
Santa Ana's police department is one of the biggest in Orange County and also one of the most controversial. Just recently, this past month, a federal jury found a police officer guilty of police brutality for beating up a suspect on video and then lying about it to his superiors or filing false reports. And of course, this is also a city that has paid out millions of dollars in wrongful death lawsuits over the past couple of years. I mean, this goes back decades and decades and decades. So asking for a police commission, it's actually nothing new. Residents have been asking for it since the 1960s.
There are several layers, Gustavo, of oversight that are already in place for police, and that includes Orange County's district attorney, the city council in Santa Ana itself. Why isn't that enough? Why does there need to be a commission?
Well, this is something that you see, especially in urban cities across the United States, a police commission. So, of course, Los Angeles has had one for a long time, San Francisco. In Orange County, the only other city that has a police commission is in Anaheim. And the argument goes that, yeah, you do have a district attorney's office. You even have the attorney general and the city council. But a lot of those times, those people are associated with the police department, especially in the city of Santa Ana. A lot of the council members have received donations from the police union, and the city council in turn this past year granted the Santa Ana Police Department $25 million in raises. So what activists or community members say is that you need citizens who have nothing to do with the police department sort of to act as objective observers of what goes on anytime there's any allegations of malfeasance with the police or with the police department.
Talk about strange bedfellows. The ACLU and a Republican councilwoman were behind this push.
Yeah, this one's interesting. So in this time around, the council person who proposed to at least talk about having a police commission was Ceci Iglesias, a Republican, very conservative, but also, especially in Santana world, she's kind of a free thinker because she, along with another council member, Sheriff's Deputy Juan Villegas, they've actually questioned giving out raises to the Santa Ana Police Department. And as a result of that, the police department or people are trying to gather recall petitions against them specifically for that move. Ceci, this time, she said she wants a police commission because she just wants more transparency. Not a single other council member even supported the idea of putting it before them to like have a vote or anything like that. And of course, the ACLU has always been very skeptical of police power in Southern California and beyond. So what always happens in Santana, yeah, it's a big city. It does have more crime than other parts of Orange County. But as a result, you also have a police department that historically has been accused of having this cowboy mentality that because there's a lot of crime in the city, therefore they can do whatever they want and they're going to push themselves. And yes, of course, when you have police departments, there are going to be officer-involved shootings, but there's been some pretty bad cases over, at least as long as I've been reporting in Santana for about 15 years, in where you do have a police department that does believe it could do whatever it wants. So, but that said, when you have a city council that the police department showers with all sorts of donations, as long as there's that power dynamic, you're not going to see a civilian review commission in Santana.
So you're saying that perhaps it's not likely that it'll happen?
Oh, yeah, most likely. As long as you have a council majority that really sides with the police department and also a council majority that gets a lot of donations from the police department, of course not. The last thing they want is to be someone like Ceci Iglesias and be the target of a recall by proponents of the police.
Gustavo Arellano, reporter for the LA Times. Every week he's with us for KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thank you.
Gracias.
Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow, next time you bark at the mayor of one Southern California town, he might bark back. Politics can be rough. Indeed. Next on KCRW, The Business with Kim Masters. I hope you'll stick around. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, Kaylee Wells, and Christian Bordahl made this show happen today on this Monday. We are online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast, would you? You won't be disappointed. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ear. Have a great day.